Hello and welcome to the American Magazine podcast for September 27th. This week, Carrie Weber, our associate editor, sat down with Eboo Patel, who is the co-founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps. Patel speaks about how he, as a Muslim, has been inspired by Catholic thinkers like Dorothy Day and the work his organization has done on Catholic campuses across the country. This is part one of a two-part interview. In part two, Eboo Patel talks about the anti-Islamic prejudice that has manifested itself in wake of the controversy surrounding the so-called mosque at Ground Zero.
I wonder if we could start a little bit with what it is in your life that made you first aware of interfaith, the importance of interfaith relationships.
Well, an awful lot of it had to do with my Muslim path intersecting with the Catholic faith, actually. And in so many ways, my first faith hero was Dorothy Day. When I was in college, I was getting more and more involved in social justice work, and I felt this deep need for kind of a cosmic grounding for that work. And I came across the legacy of Dorothy Day, and what she had built and what she wrote spoke to me in a very deep way. And I actually spent my summer after my sophomore year in college doing a tour of Catholic worker houses from Atlanta to Boston. And it moved me deeply that Dorothy Day had this vision of what God wanted for how God wanted us to live, how Jesus embodied that, and how she was going to follow that. And what ended up happening was I found that vision in my own faith in Islam, but it left this indelible mark that every faith has a vision of radical service, and that helped shape my vision for the Interfaith Youth Corps, which is how can we bring people together, people from different faiths together, on the common ground of serving others, and using that common ground as an opportunity to have a discussion about building interfaith understanding.
That makes a lot of sense. And even within the Catholic worker groups, there's a lot of diversity. Not everyone and all of them are Catholic. So it presents just an interesting picture of diversity within individual faiths as well.
I was struck by the diversity within Catholic worker groups itself. And you know, the invitation that I felt from many of the people I was in Catholic worker houses with to explore how my own faith of Islam connected with a radical vision of service, I just found that very, very welcoming and very open.
Now, when you were growing up, did you experience any prejudice because of your own faith?
I experienced, I think, a range of prejudice, but largely initially based on my color. And then I think that you kind of go down the rabbit hole of prejudice, and there are many layers of that rabbit hole, and faith was certainly one of them. And I think a piece of that meant that I did not feel confident about openly expressing my faith in public. And I think that's another reason for launching the Interfaith Youth Corps. It is a movement and a space in which people can proudly express how their faith inspires them to improve the world and connect to one another. And I think that's so important for people from all faiths.
Now, you gave a commencement speech at Stanford about talking about Brother Wayne Teasdale as well. And could you talk about sort of his influence in your life and how that has affected the work you're doing too?
Sure. I mean, it's actually remarkable. So many of the people who have shaped me on this path of interfaith service have been Catholics, and you know, Dorothy Day being a key one, and somebody I never knew personally, but felt like I got very close to her legacy and reading her writing and being in Catholic worker houses. Somebody I did know personally was Brother Wayne Teasdale, who was a Catholic lay monk who lived in Hyde Park in Chicago and taught at Catholic Theological Union. And was very clear of this notion of having roots in his Catholic tradition, but wings also in his study and admiration for Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam, and effectively taught me the same, right? Keep your roots in Islam, he would say, but find the common ground between all faiths, and that common ground is service, and recognize that dialogue between religions with the key question of how do our faiths call us to serve others is fruitful in deepening you in your own faith, in building bridges of understanding between different faiths, and in doing what God wills for all of us, which is to serve humankind.
Now, a lot of your work with the Interfaith Youth Corps is taking place on college campuses. What about college campuses make those places sort of ideal, if that's what you imagine they are, right, for this kind of work?
So at the Center for Youth Core, we think that college campuses can show what successful interfaith cooperation looks like for the rest of the society. And the campuses that I have particular focus on are Catholic campuses. So much of the work of the Interfaith Youth Core has taken place on Catholic campuses. DePaul University, Loyola University in both Chicago and Baltimore, Dominican University outside of Chicago, St. Mary's College outside of the Bay Area, Xavier University in Cincinnati. And I think there's a reason for this. Catholic universities take faith, service, diversity, and leadership very, very seriously. And I think that the 200-odd Catholic colleges and universities in America can take the lead in showing the country and the world what a model of interfaith cooperation looks like.
You also have interfaith trainers, is that what you call them, that go to these colleges?
That's right.
To try to help to, I guess, do what? If you tell me a little bit.
So in our partnerships with college campuses, one of the lead things we try to do is help college campuses articulate an aspiration for being a model interfaith campus. And what we mean by that is there a, I'll just give you some of the hallmarks that we think make up a model interfaith campus. Is there a presidential commitment to interfaith cooperation, which is to say, does it reach the very highest levels of the campus? Number two, is there academic curriculum in which a student can explore interfaith cooperation through theology, through history, through anthropology, through political science? I mean, there's a variety of fields which shine a light on interfaith cooperation. Are there places in which a student can explore that academically? Are there opportunities for large-scale interfaith service projects? So many college campuses, especially Catholic campuses, do large-scale days of service. Is there a way to involve an interfaith dimension in that, which is to say you have dozens and dozens of people trained to be interfaith facilitators to ask the key question, how do the various faiths of the people in this group doing service together, how does that faith inspire them to serve others? Does your staff and your student leadership have a kind of a basic level of religious diversity training or interfaith cooperation training, which might be analogous to multicultural training? Do you have measurements for how your, for the knowledge base, for the behavior, for the attitudes of your students around religious diversity and interfaith cooperation issues? These are some of the hallmarks of what we think are a model interfaith campus, and we're actually working very closely with DePaul University and Dominican University in a strategic planning process to help them set an aspiration for where their universities want to go when it comes to interfaith cooperation and their campus ecology of their student body. And I imagine there are dozens and dozens of Catholic universities who would be interested in this and who would be ripe for this kind of aspiration.
Now, when you're talking with these Catholic colleges, are they looking at their own student body and looking at the diversity within that, or are they looking out somewhere beyond to the city or to the country?
Yeah. So both. And I think that DePaul University and Dominican University are two excellent examples. DePaul is a university of 25,000 students, highly, highly diverse. And so within that student body, there is an awful lot of racial, ethnic, and religious diversity. And of course, it's right in the middle of Chicago, and so it's surrounded by religious diversity. Dominican University doesn't have an awful lot of ethnic or religious diversity. And so our work with Dominican is in part exposing their students to religious diversity by using the city of Chicago as kind of a laboratory of learning. And I think that there's a number of college campuses like DePaul with a lot of internal diversity. I can think of Xavier University in Cincinnati, for example, or other very urban Catholic universities. And there's schools like Dominican without that much internal diversity, but that care an awful lot about their students being interfaith leaders. And the Interfaith Youth Core is excited to work with those schools also.
Now, as individuals on the Catholic campus, what does it take for these students to sort of become that sort of interfaith leader?
Right. So a huge part of our work with college campuses is inspiring and training students to be interfaith leaders, by which I mean people who have the framework, the knowledge base, and the skill set to bring people from different religions together to build understanding and cooperation. An awful lot of what we do is teach people that framework, that knowledge base, and that skill set, and then give them, in partnership while through working with their campuses, opportunities to apply those. So, for example, we train students to start their own interfaith service projects, and then they actually go ahead and start that interfaith service project. And so they have an opportunity to apply those interfaith leadership skills in a campus setting immediately. And of course, a big part of what they're doing is building campus community bridges. And that's something that Catholic colleges care an awful lot about also.
What about, I guess, in an era of pluralism that also includes, I guess, as President Obama mentioned in his inaugural speech, people who, I guess, are non-believers, how did they play into this sort of interfaith equation, if they do?
That's a great question, and they certainly do, and we invite secular humanists to come to the table to articulate how their tradition, the values of service or mercy, the books or heroes that they might draw inspiration from, inspires them to do service also.
And has there been any conflict because there isn't sort of that common higher power necessarily in this dialogue?
You know, not especially. And the reason is because what we really put at the center of the table is the shared value, service, mercy, compassion. And then we invite people to speak to how their tradition inspires them to apply that shared value. So we create a setting where people can be proud of their relationship with their tradition, whether it's a relationship with the Catholic tradition or the Muslim tradition or the humanist tradition. But it's all about what we call affirming shared values and achieving pluralism and affirming particularity.
How do you have an interfaith dialogue that doesn't just sort of meld all religions into one and sort of gloss over the differences?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to do is to recognize that there are huge differences. Mm-hmm. There are huge doctrinal differences. Catholics believe Jesus is the Son of God and died on the cross, and Muslims don't, right? And I think what we ought to do is simply say that is an unbridgeable difference, mm-hmm. but it is not the most fruitful dialogue for us to have. Because at the end of the day, it's simply a doctrinal disagreement, right? There are really fruitful dialogues to have on shared values, mercy, service, compassion. But just because Muslims believe in mercy and Catholics believe in mercy doesn't mean we believe in, it doesn't mean we walk the same path towards mercy. So the interesting dimension of that dialogue is, what is it in your tradition of Catholicism that inspires you to act in mercy? Right. And so you get these very rich stories from Catholics about the works of Jesus, about scripture from the Bible. And you get these rich stories from Muslims about Muslim prayers, about mercy, about stories relating to Muhammad, etc.
I think you've written about when you first came up with the idea for the Interfaith Youth Corps, you noticed that a lot of the people in dialogue were the older people, and a lot of the people that sort of were skewing towards fundamentalism were the younger folks. What is it that makes that so, and have you seen a change in that?
I think it's so much about the invitation. The Interfaith Youth Corps has grown dramatically in the last 8 years, and it's not because we're such a brilliant organization. It's because there are loads and loads of young people who are deeply inspired by a vision of interfaith service. And so we kind of felt called by God to issue that invitation to young people to become interfaith leaders, to start their own interfaith service projects, to build the hub of this movement. And young people answer that call.
What about the role of women in the interfaith dialogue? Is sometimes in some faiths, women don't have as prominent a role. And are they as prominent in the dialogue? Or have you seen, you know, what are the demographics of the people searching for this dialogue?
So I would say 70% of our staff is women, and I would say that stat holds broadly true throughout our programs. And I just think it's an indication of women's leadership in the area of connecting to their faith and how it inspires them to serve others, and women's leadership in the area of building bridges across different faiths.
Have you experienced sort of the trend that seems to be popular right now of the spiritual but not religious young people? And how does that play into dialogue?
Sure, we see that. So the way we frame our question, which is, how does your tradition inspire you to serve others, is constantly referring young people back to a tradition, right? And so there might be people who have not been practicing in a tradition in a ritualistic way, but want to express how that tradition inspires them to serve others. And I think our process helps reconnect young people with traditions that they might have felt for whatever reason estranged from, or they have gone astray from. And I hear it with some frequency, young people saying, the process of interfaith service compelled me to go back to church. Because I saw, in explaining how my religion inspired me to serve others, in watching people who were listening to my story light up with kind of admiration for my tradition, I felt like I needed to reconnect to it.
What would you say sort of fuels the religious fundamentalism that is out there? Is it a lack of dialogue, or is it a lack of education? Is it just a pure desire to, ignore some of the facts in front of them?
I think religion can be one of four things in the 21st century. It can be a bubble of isolation. It can be a barrier of division. It can be a bomb of destruction. It can be a bridge of cooperation. And what those four things have in common is they're an answer to the question, how do I respond to diversity? You can respond by bubbling yourself off. You can respond by building a barrier. You can respond by building a bomb, or you can respond by building a bridge. And I think that faith communities have to recognize that especially their young people live in a world of diversity and need a clear answer to the question, how do I live my faith in a world of diversity? And by not answering that question, you simply create a vacuum so that nefarious forces can answer that question. And oftentimes those forces are encouraging young people to respond to diversity by building barriers or bombs. The Interfaith Youth Corps is a partner with religious communities in saying that there are resources within our faith communities and a call from the divine to build a bridge to diversity, a bridge of cooperation, using the raw materials of the theology of your faith and walking across that bridge to serve others.
So the responsibility does go back eventually to each individual faith. I imagine it'd be harder for someone who is in a very isolated area who does not have maybe access to a college community that would provide something like the Interfaith Youth Corps.
Because of the media environment we live in, people who don't live within 100 miles of a Muslim still have an image of what a Muslim is because they see Muslims on the evening news, right? And I would just refer people to our website, www.ifyc.org. And even if you don't know somebody from a different religion, you can learn about that person's religion, how other religions inspire service. You can meet people online from other faiths and have a positive dialogue with them. So I think that there's a lot of good things we can do in the online world. And I think that, frankly, we have forfeited too much of the media environment to religious extremists and religious bigots. But we can take that back.
Do you worry about how the media in general presents religion? Because you talk about the extremists and the bigots, and that seems to be often who makes the news. And so if you are isolated, this is who you're going to see. You're going to maybe see an extremist, a bigot, and then you're either going to think that everyone from that religion is like that and be disgusted with it or enamored by it and want to, join that sort of extreme group.
I think that that's exactly right. And I think that it's incumbent upon us who view religion as a bridge of cooperation, college campuses that are advancing this interfaith service movement, that are becoming models of interfaith cooperation, to not only do the work but tell the story, right? And the story is inspiring. It's inspiring when you have college students from different religions at a DePaul or a Loyola or a Xavier who are saying, my religion inspires me to cooperate with you to serve others. I think we ought to not be shy about that story. Bigots and extremists are not shy about their vision of the world. We ought to be proud of ours.
Can you give me an example of somebody who has sort of undergone a change working in this kind of environment? Or has anyone working through this dialogue said to you, I maybe had hesitations about working with someone or other? Or do people come in very open usually?
Let me think of a great college campus story. Okay, so at Wesleyan University, a Muslim and a Jewish student discovered the common practice of fasting within their religions and the connection between fasting and service and justice. And what they did was organize a fast-a-thon, and they invited students in the college community to participate in it to experience the sacred practice of fasting and to donate the money they would have spent on food that day to a local food bank, and then to engage in a dialogue on fasting, spirituality, food, diversity. And they got 800 people from the Wesleyan community, which is about a quarter of the Wesleyan campus community, to participate. And I think that's a great example of students who might not have otherwise seen connections between their religions. I mean, Islam and Judaism are portrayed as religions that are fighting all the time. And instead, these students found a commonality in fasting and the connection between fasting and service, and they created this huge project that invited other people to participate in that and see that commonality and apply that shared value of feeding others.
Can you talk a little bit about your work with the White House that you've been doing and how that has affected the Interfaith Youth Corps and maybe your own views on dialogue?
So President Obama, in a number of speeches, has lifted up the importance of different religions coming together in service. The National Prayer Breakfast addresses, for example, in his Cairo address last June, he said, "We ought to be building bridges of cooperation between faiths through service." So this is close to the president's heart and a part of the president's vision. And I served on the President's Advisory Council for Faith, and one of the recommendations that we put into the Faith Council report is that interfaith service projects ought to be scaled on 500 college campuses. And I really think that Catholic universities have kind of a leg up on many other universities because they have taken volunteerism seriously for many, many years. They naturally connect faith to volunteering. So many Catholic universities have diverse student populations or live or exist in areas in which diversity is around them. And Catholic universities, because they take their own faith seriously, have an appreciative understanding of other people's faiths. So in this presidential initiative of scaling interfaith service projects to 500 campuses, I see no reason why the first 230 can't be Catholic universities.
Now, the issue of the president's own religion sort of became a topic of discussion during the 2008 presidential election. Do you think that the debate over his religion sort of represents an unwillingness of the American public to sort of dialogue, or is this an obstacle that, you know, still must be overcome?
You know, I do. I think it's a problem. I think that the way that Mitt Romney's Mormon faith was talked about in the media, I think the way that Sarah Palin's evangelical faith, I think the way that Barack Obama's Muslim grandfather was talked about in the media, as if their connection to their religion somehow disqualified them from office, I think that that's terrible. I think it's bigotry. And if you consider it against how the mainstream media and mainstream America viewed the fact that you had two women running for high office and an African-American running for high office, there was kind of a self-applause, right? Like, America has evolved so far beyond sexism and racism. And we've done well on those counts. We have further to go, but we've done well. I think that religious bigotry is just as bad as racism or sexism. And I hope that in the 2012 election, America will have evolved beyond questioning somebody's faith and wondering if their connection to that faith makes them fit or unfit for office. I think this is the kind of thing, again, that college students can play a big role in. I think that college students should be standing up against religious bigotry on their campus, in their communities, and in national elections.
And you've talked about bringing the idea of interfaith dialogue on par with multiculturalism and volunteerism, which are huge on college campuses.
That's right.
Now.
I mean, so this is part of what it means to model a new ethic. And I would invite college presidents, especially Catholic college presidents, to consider how the kind of resources and attention they invest in volunteerism and multiculturalism and how they view their own campus as a model for that value for the broader society, how they want to educate and train a generation of leaders who are steeped in the ethic of multiculturalism and volunteerism, and consider what it would look like to have interfaith cooperation play a similar role.
How has this whole process and the founding of this organization and your work affected your own faith?
You know, it's only strengthened it. Because I have the chance to talk about my religion with a sense of pride in front of audiences that are multi-religious, I deepen my pride in my own faith, because I have to explain Islam to people who are asking curious and appreciative questions about it. I have to know my own faith better, because I know that I exist and I raise children in a multi-religious world. I have to give them a sense of what it means to be Muslim in a world of people who are different. So a deep appreciation for their own religion, as well as I am lifting up how that religion calls them to connect positively with others.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Great to be with you. And I want to say a big thank you to the Catholic community for the inspiration, for the heroes of Dorothy Day and Brother Wayne Teasdale and Thomas Merton and so many others. And a big thank you to Catholic intellectuals, to Catholic campuses, to the Catholic religious and lay leadership for modeling the ethic of interfaith cooperation and continuing to show the way.
Well, thank you again.